Good morning and welcome to, I think it's the 15th annual Whole Life Expo. It's very fitting that our first speaker should be Dr. Zoltan Rona. I think he's been at pretty much every one of our 15 expos. He's also been in most issues of Vitality magazine, for which he's the medical advisor. He writes a column for Alive. He writes a column for The Healthy Living Guide. He is the medical editor of the massive Encyclopedia of Natural Healing, and he's also the author of the bestseller, The Return to the Joy of Health, among too many other books to mention. Our topic this morning is depression, prevention and treatment with natural remedies. Depression is rampant, of course. Well, all of you probably aren't too depressed because you're here at 11:30 in the morning. But it's rampant. All those people who are still in bed now, and our society has a horror of depression. We get very frightened when people get depressed, even though sometimes there's a good reason to get depressed and to be depressed and to go into that and to live that. And I guess a good psychotherapist would be the one to work that out with. However, there are alternatives to Prozac, which is so commonly prescribed. It's known as vitamin P. And Dr. Rona is going to go into all the alternatives that will help you deal with your depression, help you come out of your depression without compromising your health at the same time. Please welcome Dr. Rona.
Good morning. Okay, I'm in a pretty good mood for this discussion. I had better be. So thank you for having me here. And it's nice to see so many people in the audience for hopefully not too boring a lecture. I should tell you right off the bat that I'm not a psychiatrist, so anything I say really can't be used against me. And you should check it out with a psychiatrist before trying it. Obviously, there's a lot of controversy about many of the things that I'm going to be talking about. However, there is good scientific background or a basis for using natural therapies to treat the depression. One of the best books that I can recommend on this is a book by Dr. Melvin Weerbach, who himself is a psychiatrist. The name of the book is Nutritional Influences on Mental Illness, and it's by Third Line Press. Comes out every 2 or 3 years. Each time it comes out, the volume gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's not because there are more mental illnesses around, but because there are basically a lot more scientific studies on the use of herbs, vitamins, minerals, diet changes, etc. So if you wanted a reference for some of the things that I'm going to be talking about, this would probably be the best one. There's a couple of other books that you can get from a health food store. This book, Nutritional Influences on Mental Illness by Dr. Weerbach, is basically used by doctors, but a lot of people who are well-read in the subject can probably get a great deal out of that as well. There are some other books at health food stores which you can check into. Aside from the Encyclopedia of Natural Healing and some of my other books, there's one book by Dr. Ralph Golan, G-O-L-A-N, called Optimal Wellness. There's a lot of information in there on mental health and natural therapies. Another book called The Good News About Depression by Dr. Mark S. Gold. And the third one I would recommend would be Natural Alternatives to Prozac by Dr. Michael Murray. And that's published by Morrow & Company, New York, 1996. There are quite a few others, and as I go along speaking this morning, I'll be mentioning some of those references. Now, before we begin and get into the natural approaches to treating depression or enhancing mood, let's just define what some of the symptoms of depression are. It seems to me that every second patient that comes into my office is either on Prozac, Zoloft, Luvox, Wellbutrin, or any of these other prescription antidepressants or tranquilizers. And some of the symptoms that they're basically being treated for that are being labeled as depression include things like chronic fatigue. That seems to be very common. Sleep disturbances of almost every type, usually insomnia. People who wake up in the middle of the night several times for no specific reason. Sometimes people who wake up from a bad dream, any kind of sleep disturbances, appetite changes, either no appetite, hardly eating anything, or eating too much. And there are, of course, a few people that basically use food as a way of tranquilizing themselves or making them feel better, improving or enhancing their moods. Irritability, sadness, chronic anger, all of those could be parts of a sort of a depressive syndrome. Loss of interest or pleasure in life. A lot of people complain about that and are prescribed some kind of medication. In fact, there's now some advertising on television. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but in the United States, and I don't know here in Canada, I've seen a few commercials advertising an antidepressant called Paxil for social phobia, people who are afraid to go out to parties or who don't interact well with their classmates in school are prescribed Paxil, and suddenly you see them 30 seconds later on the commercial smiling and looking quite pleased with life. So those kind of things are all part and parcel of what doctors call or treat as depression. Feelings of worthlessness, despair, inadequacy, increased thoughts of death or suicide. Suicide is one of the major complications, obviously, of depression that you would want to stop. And I'm not opposed to the use of prescription medications in cases of severe suicidal emergencies. And if there are good reasons to suspect that a person is going to be a threat to themselves or to others, then probably the right thing to do is to use a medical or psychiatric intervention. So basically that's it. Those are basically the symptoms of a depressive syndrome. Now, what causes depression? I think one of the things we have to look at is in the past 10 to 15 years, the number of people that are suffering from various types of depression who are on prescription antidepressants or tranquilizers or what have you has gone up dramatically. I think it's estimated between 40 and 50 million people in North America are using one of these, what are called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the Prozac, the Paxil, etc. So do all these people really have a Prozac deficiency? One wonders. But some of the things that can cause or trigger people to feel depressed or upset would include things like traumatic life events, various stresses of your job or relationships or tensions, most of which are a normal part of life. I think that menopause, for example, and andropause in men is a normal part of life, and part of it may involve, you know, some mood changes and mood swings or perhaps feeling depressed for periods of time. And to medicate that is questionable. Also, there are things like heredity. Heredity, if you talk to a conventional medical doctor, they'll tell you that over half the cases of people that come into their offices with depression have had both parents who have suffered from the illness themselves. So there is a hereditary tendency, certainly for manic depressive illness, which is a form of depression where you have severe highs and severe lows. That may be more true than for other forms of depression. Oftentimes what you hear doctors talking about is chemical imbalances in the brain. And when doctors say that you have a chemical imbalance, and oftentimes I see patients in my practice who come in and tell me that my doctor told me I had a chemical imbalance, but they don't understand what that is. What we're really talking about here as doctors is an imbalance or a deficiency or an excess of certain neurotransmitters. Now, these are chemical messengers in the brain which basically will communicate messages from one cell to another. And these neurotransmitters are known as dopamine, norepinephrine, melatonin, serotonin, and GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid. So those are the major neurotransmitters. So a deficiency in some of those may well be at the bottom of some cases of depression or chronic mental problems. Of course, you have to rule out things like thyroid disorders, particularly low thyroid. It's been mentioned by several people, and if you've been reading the newspapers or read any health books, that a large number of people suffer from undiagnosed or what they call subclinical hypothyroidism. That's a low thyroid condition where the blood test may not necessarily show an abnormality, and yet the person can suffer from things like cold hands and feet and can suffer from problems like constipation, hair loss, problems with moods, depression certainly. And they may have a chronically low temperature below 97.4, an underarm temperature reading of less than 97.4 consistently usually can be helped by a prescription for a low-dose thyroid, natural thyroid, like desiccated thyroid or armor thyroid is what they call it in the United States. So people with low thyroid condition, people with low adrenal condition, people with low levels of the adrenal hormones, and these are DHEA, low levels of dehydroepiandrosterone, that's DHEA, cortisol. Also, other adrenal hormones may be involved, including estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Those are all adrenal hormones as well as ovarian or testicular hormones. And it's quite surprising how many people that I see in my practice have low levels of those particular hormones who suffer from different forms of depression. Now, the other thing that's often forgotten about is nutritional deficiencies. And in this book, for example, I was quite surprised to see that at least 100 pages of article, reference article after reference article describing people who suffer from depression or different studies where they show that B vitamins deficiencies or suboptimal levels of B complex vitamins being related to depression and the supplementation of those B vitamins ameliorating many of the symptoms of depression. And the most important ones here would be vitamin B6, B12, and folic acid. I'll get into those a little bit later on, some of the interesting things to do with those. Of course, also vitamin C, calcium, zinc, copper, iron deficiency, magnesium, and even potassium deficiency can be associated with depression. So it's very important to rule out deficiencies or excesses in certain nutrients, and in particular, those the B vitamins, vitamin C, calcium, zinc, copper, iron, magnesium, and potassium. Too much or too little magnesium, in fact, can cause depression, and so can too much of vanadium. Vanadium is a mineral that very few people talk about, except if you're a diabetic. A lot of diabetics take vanadium because it tends to control or increase insulin levels, and so controls your blood sugar. But if you get too much vanadium, then what happens is that can make you feel depressed. Of course, many years ago, before we had all kinds of fancy tests on different types of vitamins and all these SSRIs and serotonin, nobody was talking about serotonin, nobody was talking about dopamine or any of these other neurotransmitters. We all knew of a condition called hypoglycemia, which when I first got started in natural medicine in the late 70s, people like Paavo Eirola and Carlton Fredericks had written several books on the signs and symptoms of hypoglycemia or low blood sugar, which in many cases can cause people to feel their moods can go low with a low blood sugar, or their moods can be fluctuating severely with fluctuations in blood sugar levels or insulin levels. And of course, food allergies. Food allergies is another potential cause of depression. There are a lot of people that respond. I guess some people with food allergies will get hives. If you are allergic, let's say, to wheat, it's quite possible that it may affect your gastrointestinal tract, give you diarrhea, give you problems with what's called irritable bowel syndrome, give you problems with hyperacidity, etc. But if your target organ is not the stomach but the brain, it may cause hyperactivity, as in children, or it may cause nervousness or depression or irritability, as it can in adults. And over the past 20 years, I've done probably hundreds of food allergy tests on patients with chronic mental ailments, and it's very common to see them with a very positive response to eliminating foods, common foods. Usually it's milk, wheat, citrus, soy. It could be chocolate. It could be a simple thing like milk or cheese or yogurt, even some healthy foods can, in some cases, if the individual is sensitive, it can cause them to feel depressed. So those are all the kind of things that we look into when we're assessing for reasons why a person may be depressed. So let's say I had no tests whatsoever, which is what basically when you go see a conventional medical doctor, you tell them that you have these symptoms. And what they may do is they may question you about your social and your work history or your past medical history, etc. They may do a few lab tests on you, but beyond that, they're not going to check your Prozac levels or B12 levels in most, for the most part, and they'll put you onto a prescription antidepressant. However, I think if you wanted to go deeper than that, you could actually be doing lab testing on, for example, all your adrenal hormones. You can do lab testing on thyroid hormones. Now, with thyroid hormones, what you should ask your doctor to do is a free T3. That's free as in not in jail. Free T3, free T4, TSH, and thyroid antibodies. The reason why you do thyroid antibodies is because a lot of cases of low thyroid or suboptimal thyroid function may be due to an autoimmune condition where the immune system is making antibodies against your own organs and thereby inhibiting thyroid function. You can also get blood levels done for DHEA, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. All of those can be done both saliva and in blood. Now, there's some doctors who are using saliva testing as opposed to blood testing to check for those levels. As far as vitamins and minerals are concerned, there's many different tests for those. For B12 and folic acid, for vitamin B12, you can just do a complete blood count, a CBC, and if you see on the CBC that the MCH or MCV is elevated, then you know that the red cells are larger than they should be, and large or macrocytes, macrocytic red blood cells usually means B12 deficiency. And you can also do what's called live cell microscopy. Live cell microscopy is a test where you use a dark field lens and you examine the blood directly and you look for what's called hypersegmented neutrophils. Hypersegmented neutrophils can only mean one thing, and that's folic acid deficiency. And folic acid deficiency is a very much neglected or ignored cause of depression. For many of the minerals, you can use a combination of blood tests, hair mineral analysis. Hair mineral analysis is very controversial. It is probably excellent for detecting toxic heavy metals, especially lead, cadmium, aluminum, mercury, zinc, and copper. It can also sometimes tell you about nutritional minerals like selenium, silicon, zinc, chromium, manganese, calcium, magnesium, and so on. But its use is controversial, and I think you should take it and use the information from a hair analysis in context with other lab tests. So from all of that, in some cases, you may want to do food allergy testing. In some cases, you won't. It all depends on the individual's history. And you may want to check things like your insulin level. If the insulin level is very high, chances are quite high that you're having a problem with carbohydrate intolerance. You are probably, in many cases, with a very high insulin level, your blood sugar may be very low often or frequently. And if the insulin level is low, and I've seen quite a few cases of that, then the chances are high that there's an autoimmune disease of some sort going on. And in cases like that, then you have to basically look at the immune system as well as checking and controlling blood sugar levels. Okay, so once you've done all that and you've found various things, there's a number of different treatments that you can obviously use. And if you have food allergies found, then you eliminate the offending foods for anywhere from 6 to 12 months. And if that relieves the symptoms, after 6 months, you could try adding those foods back to see what kind of reactions you're getting. And in 80% of the cases, what will happen is that you'll be able to tolerate that food again. Now, the kind of food allergies I'm talking about are not the immediate type 1 hypersensitivity reactions, like when you eat strawberries and get hives or shellfish and get migraine headache or something like that. It's basically the types of allergies that occur on the delayed basis. So you eat the wheat or milk on Monday morning, and on Wednesday night you feel depressed, and you feel depressed for the next 2 weeks. So it's those kind of delayed hypersensitivities. Those can be eliminated from the diet and then added back 6 months later to check and see if there's still a response. As I said, in 80% of the cases, people can add those foods back again to their diets. If you have a problem with blood sugar control, hypoglycemia, or if you have elevated or low insulin levels, then those can be treated naturally as well, partially with a diet. In some cases, in people that have adrenal problems, who have low levels of DHEA, low levels of cortisol, oftentimes what works really well there is a high-protein type of diet where you limit the amount of carbohydrates as much as possible, somewhat like the Zone diet, which is very popular these days, where you get 40% of your calories from protein, 30% from fat, 30% from carbohydrates. So that kind of thing, or perhaps something close to the Atkins diet without actually going on the Atkins diet, because that's like no carbohydrates. So everyone's a little bit different on that. There are some people that do better on a high complex carbohydrate diet, and that would be more a diet like eating a lot of whole grains, fresh fruits, vegetables, legumes, or starchy beans, and limiting your intake of high-protein animal foods like dairy products and meats and seafoods and that sort of thing. So everyone's a little bit different on that if you find that as a problem. Many of you may be aware that psychiatrists use lithium as a treatment for manic depressive illness. Well, lithium is a natural mineral. Everybody has certain levels of lithium in their bodies, and it can be taken by some people with depression. There are some case histories of people who have depression, don't have manic depressive illness, but just have very mild forms of depression who respond nicely to low-dose lithium therapy. Now, lithium is usually used in dosages of 300 to 600 to even 900 milligrams a day by most conventional psychiatrists, but here we're talking about dosages far less than that, usually between 10 to 30 milligrams a day. And low-dose lithium therapy is usually quite non-toxic, whereas the very high levels may produce some problems with weakening the thyroid and the kidneys. So that's one thing that certainly we should consider using. Now, if you do hair mineral analysis, you can sometimes get a lithium level done. I'm not so sure that that's terribly accurate, but if it's very low, then oftentimes using sea kelp. Sea kelp is a natural source for lithium, and you can probably get that from any health food store, and certainly anywhere from 3 to 9 tablets a day would help restore lithium levels as well as many other minerals, including iodine. Something else that I neglected to mention earlier is cholesterol. Recently, several studies have come out showing that low cholesterol levels are linked to depression. Results of a study conducted by Dutch researchers provide additional evidence for a link between low cholesterol levels and an increased risk of depression in men. Investigators measured serum cholesterol levels in some 30,000 men as part of a large screening program. They compared the presence of depressive symptoms, anger, hostility, and impulsivity in these men to men with cholesterol levels in the normal range. They found that men with chronically low cholesterol levels showed a consistently higher risk of having depressive symptoms. Cholesterol may affect the metabolism of serotonin, a substance known to be involved in the regulation of mood, as the researchers have previously shown that serotonin levels are also reduced in men with low levels of cholesterol. So one of the things that has occurred with a great deal more frequency in the past 10 years is the use of cholesterol-lowering medications. And cholesterol not only causes a depletion of these medications that lower cholesterol not only cause a depletion of serotonin, but they also cause a depletion of coenzyme Q10. And coenzyme Q10 deficiency usually produces severe fatigue in many cases. It may produce heart problems. And there have been a lot more cases of cardiovascular side effects as a result of those particular medications, not just depression. So we have to be pretty careful when people are on those kind of medications to recognize that when they come into our offices a year or two later feeling depressed, that it's not necessarily because of a terrorist attack or anthrax or something else. So that's certainly one thing that we should definitely look at. Other things that may be very important that I didn't mention before are certain amino acid deficiencies. Part of this is due to the diet. Part of this may be due to severe stress, and some of it may be due to the effects of medications or digestive problems, etc. But for example, the amino acid taurine, that's spelled T-A-U-R-I-N-E, it's an amino acid which in a very high dosages has been shown to have anticonvulsive properties. So it can be used in epileptics in many cases and seems to help control seizures quite nicely. And the usual dosage that's recommended is between 500 to 1,000 milligrams 1 to 3 times daily, depending on the individual. But it's also been shown in some medical journals that taurine in the same dosages may help cases of manic depression. And interestingly enough, in manic depression, there's been a growing tendency for doctors to prescribe anticonvulsant medications, things like, for example, Depakote and others. And these particular drugs seem to be quite effective for manic depressive illness and unfortunately have a lot of different side effects. So perhaps that's another thing that can be tried is taurine, L-taurine, which is an amino acid you can probably get from a health food store. Maybe not in this country, although you'll have to find out about that later. Another amino acid is called GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid. It's usually classified as an amino acid, although it's also a neurotransmitter in the brain. There are more GABA sites in the brain than for any of the other neurotransmitters, such as dopamine or serotonin. GABA basically serves as an inhibitory neurotransmitter, keeping the brain and body from going into overdrive. So GABA in a supplement form can, if you take it in high dosages, it can actually attach to those receptors and help you relax and help you feel that your mind is not racing. Currently, for instance, pharmaceutical companies are working on a GABA reuptake inhibitor that would artificially keep more GABA in the synapses of the brain, similar to what Prozac and other related drugs do for serotonin as a treatment for anxiety. So GABA may be used to treat anxiety, it may be used to treat insomnia, but may also be used to treat manic depressive illness. Supplementation of GABA seems to be quite effective for anxiety disorders as well as insomnia, especially a type of insomnia where racing thoughts keep the individual from sleeping, from falling asleep. If any of you are feeling that way, chances are you need a little bit more GABA. GABA, G-A-B-A, gamma-aminobutyric acid, GABA. In addition, although there has been little, if any, research reported on this, there is also reason to believe that GABA may be effective in the treatment of manic depression, since many of the substances that are currently used for the purpose, including Depakote and obviously gabapentin, affect GABA usage. This is something that may be well worth trying for certain selected individuals. Unfortunately, we cannot put a probe into your brain and measure your serotonin, GABA, or dopamine levels. Doctors haven't gotten that sophisticated yet, although give them time. But basically, right now, there are ways of looking into whether or not the amino acid precursors to these neurotransmitters may be high or low. And you can do an amino acid analysis, for example. You can do a plasma or serum amino acid analysis, and you can determine whether or not certain levels, like, for example, tryptophan or tyrosine or phenylalanine or GABA or other amino acids are either high or low and then adjust it accordingly. Or you can do what most physicians do. You know, you basically do a trial therapy. So before you get put onto Prozac or Paxil or Zoloft or any of these drugs, nobody does a Zoloft level on you to see whether or not you need it. You basically try the Zoloft, okay? So this is called a trial therapy. This is what most doctors do. So one can do pretty much the same thing with any of these neurotransmitters. Undesirable effects of too much GABA may include tingling or numbness in the extremities or trunk of the body and some shortness of breath. If this occurs, then one would just take a slightly lower dose. Now, I've tried taking GABA myself, and I've tried it in massive dosages, and I did feel that numbness and tingling, and I did feel a little bit short of breath, but it only lasted for about 5-10 minutes, so if you take a few deep breaths, it just seems to go away. However, you do get a nice little buzz off it, I must admit. there's a company now that allergy research, many people who come to these events know about the allergy research company from the States. They've put out a supplement called 200 milligrams of Zen. And that's because one of the things that GABA does is, well, it does a lot of things. The amino acid stimulates the production of alpha brain waves directly, creating a state of deep relaxation and mental alertness, such as is often achieved via meditation. So if you don't have, you know, 300 hours to spend meditating, nor the inclination to take courses in it, nor the desire to even read a book about it, one can always take GABA because GABA tends to increase your alpha brainwave activity. It gives you a nice little feeling. Second, it appears to have a role in the formation of inhibitory, it basically blocks the release of the neurotransmitter dopamine and serotonin and may therefore have the key role in a relaxation effect. So GABA may interfere with the other neurotransmitters. So if you happen to be on, for example, Prozac, Paxil, Luvox, Zoloft, or any of those, and if you took high dosages of GABA, there is the potential that it could decrease the effectiveness of those drugs. So I'm not suggesting that everybody take this, go out and buy this stuff, but certainly it may help people that are not on medications, and it may help a lot of people who are sensitive to some of the prescription antidepressants. Because it does basically produce alpha waves in a state of relaxation. Now, where can you get this naturally? Well, one of the places you can get it naturally without having to go to a health food store is from green tea. And the reason why you get it from green tea is because green tea contains something called L-theanine, which is an amino acid which blocks or inhibits some of the adverse effects of caffeine. Ever wonder why when you drink green tea you don't get all wound up? Well, green tea contains caffeine just like coffee does or regular tea does, but green tea also contains L-theanine, an amino acid, which is a precursor to GABA. So when you drink a lot of green tea, you get a lot of this amino acid called L-theanine, and that increases the GABA levels in your brain. So long and short of it is, drinking green tea is very relaxing. And it also prevents you from being, you know, all wound up or hyper as you would from caffeine, like I am this morning. So I probably should have taken some of this stuff, but I didn't. In any event, L-theanine, you can get it naturally from green tea. You can also get it in a capsule form from Allergy Research. This is something that's come into Canada recently. But don't tell anybody. The drug companies will be very upset if they hear about that. So GABA is something to look at, especially in people that are having problems with insomnia and who are having problems with relaxation, that sort of thing, and who also need to be taking some sort of tranquilizer. And you can probably, in just about any case, get off of those tranquilizers by normalizing that neurotransmitter in the brain. Let's take a look at some of the B-complex vitamins. B vitamins are important factors in determining moods. Deficiencies of any or all of these vitamins can produce significant symptoms relating to depression, anxiety, irritability, lethargy, and fatigue. Many bipolar state that supplementation of B vitamins is extremely important to helping them to feel better. In general, B vitamins tend to work best together as a group. Taking too much of any one of them may result in deficiencies of others and therefore unwanted symptoms. So, for example, many people have heard that vitamin B6 is great for PMS. It's great for being depressed when you're on the birth control pill. One of the side effects of being on the birth control pill, by the way, aside from breast cancer and other types of cancer, is depression. And women who take the birth control pill, within 6 to 12 months, if they're not on a good diet, or even earlier than that, if they're on a very bad diet, they'll start feeling tired and depressed and they'll get some of these symptoms. And so taking vitamin B6 will help offset some of those bad side effects. But if you take B6 too much too long, some of you may have heard B6 in very high dosage can cause numbness and tingling in the hands. It can cause sort of like a paralysis. There have been some reports of women who are taking very high dosages of vitamin B6 by itself, and developing neurological complications, numbness and tingling and paralysis and other neurological problems. So vitamin B6 in itself is not toxic, but when you take it apart from other B vitamins, it may produce some of those kind of side effects. So my usual advice is to take a good B complex. If you do that, then almost any amount of B vitamins should not be a problem. Well, in high dosages would be, in my opinion, anything greater than 100 milligrams of any of the B vitamins, what I would consider high dosages. Different people will report different levels. If you talk to a dietitian, they would tell you that you shouldn't take any B vitamins because they're all toxic. But for most people, will tell you if you consume anywhere between 50 to 100 milligrams of any of the B complex, it should not be a problem. B complex tends to be sold in B50, 50 milligrams of most of these vitamins, 50 micrograms for a few, and 400 or 800 micrograms of folic acid, or B100, 100 milligrams per microgram dosages. Now, for vitamin B12, many of you have heard of the use of vitamin B12 shots for depression, and a significant number of people do extremely well with B12 shots. It totally clears up depression for some. And a lot of doctors have said that that's a placebo effect, because if you check the B12 blood levels, you'll find that these people either have normal or high levels of vitamin B12. So how is it that you can get a relief of depression by giving a B12 shot? Well, over the past 10 years, there have been a number of reports in psychiatric journals that show that the level of vitamin B12 may not necessarily correlate with the body's need for it. So in other words, you may not be deficient in B12, you may not be deficient in folic acid, you may not be deficient in vitamin C, yet if you took a higher dosage of any of those vitamins in any form, whether it's injected or ingested by mouth, you may see an improvement in whatever the symptoms might be. So this is taken to mean that the individual may have a greater genetic need for these particular things. And there's no test that can tell us whether we need more B12 or we need more vitamin C. If you're wondering whether or not you do, the best thing to do is to try it and see what happens. Okay, very much like doctors give you Prozac. If 20 milligrams doesn't work, then what they do is they usually up the dose to 40. If that doesn't work, they up it to 60. If that doesn't work, they switch you to Paxil, and so on. So basically, you can do very much the same kind of things with B vitamins. Now, in general, vitamin B12 is very safe. About the only toxic side effect of vitamin B12 that I know of is if you fill your entire bathtub with it and put your head underneath the level of the... you might drown in it, okay? But that's about the only side effect of vitamin B12. Folic acid may be a different thing, because folic acid may actually make some people feel worse who are on these anti-convulsant medications, for example, because one of the ways that those anti-convulsant medications work is by depleting folic acid. So some people who suffer from depression, it might be because they have too much. And so what the anticonvulsant seems to be doing, this is only a theory, is basically lowering the levels of folic acid that could be somehow irritating the individual. So in some cases, folic acid, you'll have to be careful with that one. Now, folic acid is on prescription, so very few people can get into trouble with that unless they visit a doctor like myself and get huge pills, 50 milligram tablets, etc. So basically, that won't be too much of a problem. But vitamin B12 in general is not going to produce any significant side effects. Vitamin B1, like I said, most B vitamins are usually best taken as a group. There are certain circumstances when larger amounts of vitamin B1, for example, might be more effective. Thiamine deficiencies tend to produce the following symptoms, which have been reported, and they include things like chronic fatigue, irritability, memory loss, personality changes, insomnia, anxiety, restlessness, night terrors, appetite loss, sensitivity to noise, numbness and tingling in the hands and feet, and circulation problems. In fact, if you're severely enough deficient in vitamin B1 or thiamine, you could end up with congestive heart failure, and that's a condition known as beriberi, which is a vitamin B1 deficiency. In fact, a few years ago, it was reported in the United States that some hospitalized patients who had been in hospital for several months developed beriberi, And nobody really realized that the reason why was because the hospital diet was deficient in vitamin B1. And if any of you have ever been in the hospital, you know what I'm talking about when it comes to the quality of foods in hospitals. In cases of vitamin B6 deficiency, lack of it can cause irritability, and women who have PMS or who take the birth control pill or who suffer from what's called postpartum depression, commonly supplementing with vitamin B6 is very effective at ameliorating those the type of depression that you can get from any of those cases. There is actually a test you can tell whether or not you're deficient in vitamin B6. What you do is you extend your palm up like this, and then you try to bend the two joints in your fingers, not the knuckle of your hand, until your fingertips reach your palm. This is not a fist, only two joints are bent. Do this with both hands. If it is difficult, if finger joints don't allow tips to reach your palms, a vitamin B6 deficiency is likely. So if you're having problems doing that, chances are you need some more vitamin B6. But if that's the case, take the vitamin B6 in conjunction with the B-complex. A lack of vitamin B6, by the way, also causes motion sickness or nausea. In fact, many women who have morning sickness during pregnancy, they can relieve those symptoms by taking a vitamin B6 supplement along with some ginger root. That's usually quite effective. And in some cases, vitamin B6 doesn't work, and so you have to use what's called the more bioavailable form of vitamin B6, which is called pyridoxal 5-phosphate. And if you have tried vitamin B6 or a B-complex and you don't seem to get good results despite having these particular problems, then try the pyridoxal 5-phosphate. It might work a little bit better than the pyridoxine or the regular kind of B6 that you see in most B-complex supplements. For vitamin B12, many people don't go around injecting themselves with vitamin B12, so if you have no access to a doctor or someone who's willing to inject you, or you're not the type of person who likes to inject themselves, then you can use a sublingual form or a nasal form, and that gets directly into the bloodstream. As some of you may know, for vitamin B12, it's difficult to absorb as you get older because the amount of acid that you're making is less and less with each successive decade, and acid and intrinsic factor in the stomach are required for your vitamin B12 to be absorbed. And so if you took an oral form of vitamin B12, you may get zero absorption if your intrinsic factor is missing or if you don't make enough hydrochloric acid. So the way to bypass this is to go under the tongue. There are some small blood vessels under the tongue which will then absorb the vitamin B12 directly into the bloodstream and will raise your vitamin B12 levels. So that's an alternative way of doing it, and many of my patients have had good results doing that. Now, the way you can check whether or not your B12 is a problem is, as I mentioned earlier, live cell microscopy. There are many people here. In fact, you can probably go to the exhibit area, and there's some people who are doing live cell microscopy, and ask them to check your B12 levels, because you can see that if your red cells are enlarged, if they're macrocytic, they're called macrocytes, if those are found in large numbers, then you know that B12 is deficient. Either B12 or folic acid is deficient. And then check the hypersegmented neutrophil index. So that's to check and see whether your white cells have too many segments on their nuclei. And if you have that kind of thing happening, then you know you're folic acid deficient. So check with a live cell microscopist. So that's for vitamin B12 and folic acid. Now, for folic acid, I want to mention again that you've got to be careful with taking high doses, probably in excess of 3,000 micrograms per day of folic acid, because anecdotal evidence has suggested that this may lead to manic behavior. Large doses of folic acid also reduce the efficiency of anticonvulsants like Depakote, which is often used to treat manic depressive illness. Folic acid seems to act in a way that is opposite from Depakote or other anticonvulsants, and therefore should usually be avoided except in the amounts present in foods or B-complex supplements. So the maximum usually is about 3,000 micrograms per day at the most. My experience is that most people have trouble absorbing folic acid. We see over and over again on live cell microscopy, people taking even dosages of 50 milligrams per day sometimes having trouble absorbing it. And in some cases we have to inject the folic acid in order to get a good result. But if you are on medications like anticonvulsants, be careful with folic acid.
This is the end of side one. Please fast forward your tape and continue the program on the other side.